the book that you may write, or add something, write something else about it.
And Fletcher Davis was a had a printing.
Oh, he was the printer. He was the printer in those days.
Okay.
So he did. So Uncle Jack went back to the game and began to write Rangers and Pioneers. And from there on out, he wrote The Life of Bigfoot Wallace. But his most famous book is the Red Book, as the family called it. The real name of that is Texas Indian Pirates.
And that was not about the Texas Rangers, though.
No.
That one.
Rangers and Pioneers of Texas is another book.
It's a separate book.
And he also wrote The History of Guadalupe County over. But it is in this book here now. He had put it into this book here.
The book itself, right. The three books that he did. Those were the three that he published in?
He published four altogether. The last one was The History of Fort Bend County. However, that was just about Fort Bend County and was actually restricted to more or less sales to around Fort Bend County, or somebody was born in Fort Bend County, but that's a very interesting book. I have all copies of all of his books, but the one original that I have is this.
And you said that sold for $5 back then.
Oh yes, but Anna A. Hicks at Utopia.
Mm-hmm.
Her grandmother was Virginia Sowell, daughter of Andrew Jackson Sowell of the Alamo. And she has a copy, an original copy of Rangers and Pioneers of Texas. I've seen it and read it. That was given her mother by A.J. Sowell when he wrote it. And she has it up there, and I've offered to buy it from her, but she smiled at me.
Said, not yet,
huh? Didn't say anything. But we're very close. But that book is just about a 5x8 size.
Oh,
very small.
Small book.
Yes.
Well, the Bigfoot Wallace book, was he friends with Mr. Wallace? Or?
Oh, yes. I've got his picture taken with Bigfoot Wallace in 1895.
Oh.
Yes, yeah, Bigfoot Wallace was very close. As a matter of fact, he lived for a year with Bigfoot Wallace down there when he was living below condo down there, Bigfoot, Texas. At that time, that town didn't have a name. Bigfoot Wallace just lived out in the country. Went to see him, lived in Medina County someplace.
He just lived in Medina County.
But they were very close. As a matter of fact, my grandmother, who died at the age of Leroy Pope's wife, Sarah Almeida Tisley, she died at the age of 96 in San Antonio, and Bigfoot Wallace used to visit her home. So that was when they lived in my grandmother, Leroy Pope's fountain-blessed daughter, was born in Gonzales.
Well, now you mentioned that Tinsley. Why don't we go on? I think we have touched about anything else we want to add about A.J.
Not unless you have any particular questions.
We've mentioned how come he got into the writing and where he was born. And I think we just about... And you had talked about his death.
Well,
we don't want to leave anything out.
I'd like to tell you what size man he was.
Yeah, that's a description of him. Yes, yeah. Give us a description.
Is that it?
Yes,
Well, I knew him up until the time he died. He was about 5'7" tall, weighed about 165 pounds, was lean and mean.
Henry,
No, I was kidding about that, but a lot of people have thought that he might have taken after his father, who was 6'3" and heavyset, but not fat.
Uh-huh.
You weren't fat in those days. You were working too much
too
on
much.
The farm. But then his brother, the brother, Fleeman, was also a big man. Mm-hmm. So my daddy used to call him Runty. Runty. Come here, Runty. He was the runt of the
whole bunch.
Yeah, he was the oldest boy.
He was the oldest boy.
Yes, Adeline was the oldest girl, and he was the oldest boy, and all the other boys were big men.
Can you read? And got in that Texas Ranger stuff, small or what?
Oh, yes. I'm going to, if you want it, I'll get some copies made of that parting and give it to the library.
That would be fantastic.
Because that is, it's like I say, that is the only thing he ever wrote
about himself.
You can't pick up one book of his and where he says, I did this or I did this uh-huh. or anything about his life or anything.
Well, usually, you know, on a jacket of a book, it'll have a little description of an author, but these were written so long ago, they don't have jackets with
this
them.
This here has a kind of a story about him, but I can point out so many mistakes that there's people, I don't know who wrote that, that it is because half of it is wrong.
Is it wrong? Oh.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that'd be great if we could have a, we'll copy that.
I'll
and this he wrote himself, huh?
Do you get the copies made over there free or what?
3 cents.
3 cents?
For the library, huh?
Well, good. I can save 12 cents a sheet on that. Would you like to have a copy of those?
You bet.
For 3 cents a sheet?
That's much better. And it's even you don't donate something to the library, and I do the labor, see, so.
I'll bring that up.
All right.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll bring that, and then I'll look around for something else that might be interesting.
Of interest. All right, and we'll fix it up like we do Minky's collection, All right, well, let's go on
but
to...
I would like to have, like for you now, to have a copy of that parting room, because like I say, he wrote it about himself.
How often?
Just one time.
Oh, just once.
The truth. He had no more intention of joining the Rangers than the next guy. But that night, or early that evening, a bunch of his friends rode in from Gonzales to Seguin on their way to San Antonio to join his Ranger company. He spent the night in Seguin. That gave him the idea to join the Rangers.
Oh.
I don't want this on that tape. He had no idea at all, but that was his friend. So he went down to the store and signed in, you see, as one of the members. There was a couple other guys from Seguin, the same thing. Well, I'll go with you. He flat quit his job as postmaster in Seguin. Didn't say a word to him. Just hightailed it the next day. Now, when his daddy found out, he raised all Billy you know what with him because he did it. He didn't have that blessing from his father like he described
in
this article, but he did have the blessings by his mother.
I see.
You see? And he was very much in trouble until he come home and his daddy saw where he had been shot 2 times with bullets and shot 2 times by arrows, and he says,
he felt sorry
for
him.
I'm glad you're alive. He was back in the good graces with his daddy. You see, his daddy died about 6 years after that. He got back to Seguin in about 1872, and his daddy died in 1877.
Oh, I see. So he was 2 years in good graces there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
But he, I'll say this much to him, while he was growing up there in Guadalupe County, he was a hard worker. He helped his daddy tremendously. His daddy had big jobs, and he was practically anything political, job or Asa J.L. held at one time or the other. Well, Jack and Adeline, they were back home taking care of the farm, you see. But they were, Adeline and Jack, Uncle Jack was born in what is almost downtown Seguin now, on the banks of the Walnut Creek. It's just about 100 yards from the courthouse, west of the courthouse where they were born. I tried to buy that old house where he lived years ago, but it wasn't for sale. My daddy had tried to buy it 3 years to that. He wanted that property.
Oh, isn't that sad?
But now there's a high-rise apartment house for the elderly on it, that whole block. But that's all right.
Oh, gosh.
But,
well, what did this AJ's daddy do for a living?
He was a farmer. He had ranch. Everybody in those days was a farmer and rancher. You had to
live off of the land.
You had to live off the land. So you had cows and you had hogs and you had chickens
that
and you had everything else.
Uh-huh.
But Asa J.L. had fine horses and fine cattle, and so did his brother Andrew.
Asa J. How do you spell that? Asa.
A-S-A.
A-S-A. Asa. Just like
Asa J.L. They moved quite, they'd buy land and farm it, and then they'd move to another place. They moved all around.
Oh, until they found the best.
And my daddy used to get so mad to be driving down around the country down there. He was a conductor down there on the train from Gonzales to Harwood, and he'd always drive by some of the old family homes down there, and where the old family homes used to be now is north of Texaco oil wells. All of that was sour property down there one time. Okay, but they did. You could buy an acre for a nickel in those old days.
So why not move around?
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is that it was just so cheap. They was always looking for something better, you see.
Uh-huh.
And they were looking for better creeks or better part of the river, you know. It was unsettled. They couldn't stay any place,
uh-huh.
You know. And so they lived all over Guadalupe County.
All over the place.
That's right. And it's just a wonder. I mean, you often wonder what would have ever happened to a lot of that property if they had kept what we know now as mineral rights.
Isn't that the truth?
And that used to make my daddy so mad. I'd burn my damn room.
Right where that oil well is.
Yeah, right where that oil well is.
Well, let's talk a little bit now of this Fountain J or G?
Fountain Gillespie.
G, 10-foot. And this was your
Fountain
great...
Fountain Gillespie 10-foot was my great-grandfather on my... grandmother's side.
On your grandmother's side.
Yes.
And how was it that he was justice of the peace here in Castroville?
He was justice of the peace here in Castroville in 1861. Records Medina County show that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have marriage records from the county over there where he performed marriages for other people. His brother-in-law, he performed the wedding service for his brother-in-law, Nathan Davis, when I believe he married a girl by the name of McCombs or something like that. I have a record at home, all of that. But then, his father was Dr. John Turner Kinsley.
And they were from this area?
No, Dr. John Turner Kinsley came from up around North Carolina and up through there.
How was it that they were here in this area? They just moved to this direction like everybody else did, moving around.
Everybody
moved around in those
was
days.
Moving.
That's
no,
true.
None of them were sitting still. Now, a lot of that was on account of the various wars where their people were disposed of property and things like that, and they was always looking for better land. But... is Dr. John Turner Tinsley was born in 1802 in Sumner County, Tennessee. And he died at Gonzales in 1878.
And this was the Gillespie Tinsley's father.
Yes. Dr. John Turner's father was Moses Tinsley, and Moses Tinsley married Elizabeth Betsy Turner. Now, Dr. John Turner Tinsley, his children were Mary, Virginia, Amana, John Willis, and Fountain Gillespie. Now, Fountain Gillespie, my great-grandfather, he married Sarah Almeda Davis. Sarah Almeda Davis was a brother to Nathan Davis, who married this McCombs girl over here.
Awesome.
Now, my grandmother, Sarah Almeda Tinsley, was the second oldest child of Fountain Gillespie Tinsley, who married Nancy Willis. No, who married Fountain Gillespie Tinsley married Sarah Almeda Davis.
Mm.
Now, they had nine children: Mary, Sarah, Nancy, Emma, Elizabeth, Cordella, Sophia, Martha, and Edie. All girls. Not a boy in the barn.
Can you beat that?
Now, my grandmother, Sarah Almeda, was born in Gonzales, Texas on December the 15th, 1856. She died in San Antonio on November the 9th, 1947. She married my grandfather, Leroy Pope Sow, on December the 25th, Christmas Day, 1878, in Seguin, Texas.
Oh, and so this Tinsley that was the Justice of the Peace was her father?
Yes.
Is that right? I see. Because you get start putting this stuff together, it gets a little bit... I see. Do you have any stories about him being Justice of the Peace? Is there any kind of was he noted for any specific thing, or
well,
you know, any cases?
I can only repeat what my objectives has said on that. He fought Indians around this territory. His escapades is in this two-volume set here and all of this. And my grandmother was at the age of 6 years old. She was 6 years old when they moved from Gonzales to Hondo. Hondo City, as they called it in those days. And they lived there for a while, and they moved back to Gonzales, and then they moved from Gonzales back to Seguin. Was there a while, then he moved from Seguin back to Hondo, and was from there a while. And then about two or three years before he died, he moved to Benton City, Texas, which at the present time is Lytle, that he died there, and he was buried in old Benton City Cemetery. At the time of the death, one of his daughters had died. Edie had died at the age of about 8 years old, and he was buried next to her at his death. Both of them, but the rest of the girls, they married and had families of their own, and I know where every one of them is buried. I visited some of their graves, but Fountain Gillespie and Edie is her daddy. Their graves were marked at one time, but there's nothing there now. I've searched everybody that's ever had anything to do with that cemetery over there that are still alive. I've been to them to see if they had any records, but they have no records of where he would be buried.
Hmm.
In the beginning of that cemetery, they just didn't keep any records, buried. It was just a cemetery. And a man sold that amount of land over there for a cemetery and set it off on the edge of his property and said, "All right, now you want to buy a lot in there, it'll be $2. That was it. But it's just been here recently where they have, when they made it a state historical site, the state required somebody over there to go back and get as many records as he could and to take an inventory of everybody who was in that cemetery then before they would put up that historical marker.
I see.
And if it wasn't for the state of Texas doing such things as that, as far as historical stuff, we would be in one heck of a mess.
Nobody would care, would
Nobody
they?
Nobody would care. Uh-huh. You see?
That's right.
But that's where it did some good for the state to say, all right, you want a historical marker for this?
Find the facts.
You're fine, but you do this.
Uh-huh. Find the
facts. And we will do that. And you do that. You have something for the people. We've got something for the people here with this sign. Now you get something for the people, and you establish a caretaker.
Yeah, to keep track of it.
To keep track of that cemetery. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And to plot it all.
Well, how you were saying that A.J., Uncle Jack knew, did he know this Tinsley Gillespie? No?
Oh, sure. They were raised right together.
They were?
Yes.
Oh, because you said you knew stories just by what your uncle had told you about him.
Oh, yes. You see, Uncle Jack knew him, you see. But
he was not kin to him, right? Because this was on
the mother's
side.
They weren't kin. Yeah, no, they weren't kin.
They were just friends.
That's right. But from Leslie Tinsley married Sarah Almeida Sine.
Oh, so I see how that comes into the...
This is his brother-in-law.
Uh-huh. That was his brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of stories did he tell you about him? Anything that was... Was he a pretty... notorious justice. They call them they were judges too, weren't they? Were they voted in those days or appointed, or how did you become a justice of the peace? Now I know you're elected.
Well, I think in those days it was a popularity contest, more or less. The man was very popular and he was successful and he had a lot of friends and the ability to read and write was the main thing. Regardless, if a man couldn't read and write,
you were out all the way.
No matter how popular
you were.
You couldn't have been sheriff, even if everybody said so. But I don't know whether he was elected or not. The only thing I'm going by legal documents that show that it was a justice of the peace. Now, how he got there,
that's a
whether
story.
He politicked for the job or not, or was just appointed, you know.
Uh-huh.
Or friendship or anything, but he died over there in Denton City at that time, now Lytle, and at that time Denton City had a blacksmith shop and a post office and a grocery store, and that's all it was there, and when the Missouri Pacific built their rail line from San Antonio to Laredo, they built it about 2 miles north of Benton City. So when the railroad went through, all those people they moved over to the railroad tracks, and that's where you're going to do your business then.
And he was in the blacksmith business then? No?
He was farming. He was farming then. He had large farms over there. He still has relatives over there. Miss Winnie Briggs, Miss Pearl Benson, and are over at Somerset. There's still some of those Hewitts over on there too. All of his grandchildren and great grandchildren
are all there.
Other than that, he was a devout Christian, a Methodist. He was one heck of a hellraiser, as you would say, when it comes to old fiddling and square dancing. He loved that. He loved music. And he was invited to every party, and there's always a party someplace on a Saturday night. And he would get over there and fiddle with the rest of the boys and have a good time. But other than that, he did his part in fighting in the Mexican War and fighting the Indians around Medina County and Barrett County, Guadalupe County.
Just down there.
And every place he went, there was some Indians to fight.
Somewhere. There was something to fight.
Yeah, there was something.
Animals,
to fight,
Indians, or.
That's right. I found out something there in that 1860 census that I didn't know about. I'm glad I found that out. And I had an idea from others. He was very successful financially any place he ever went. And I don't know why he was, other than working hard. The A.J. Sowell, the author, wasn't very financially fixed at the time of his death. He wasn't a property case or anything like that, but he didn't have a heck of a lot of money and never did have any money throughout his life. But then his uncle, Andrew Jackson, and Asa J.L., they were all known as moneyed men around Guadalupe County and Gonzales County. And Pop Gillespie was known around Gonzales County, where his father first settled, Dr. John Turner Kinsey first settled there. He was known as a moneyed man. And in those days, if a man had two or three cows and a calf and chickens and hogs, one or two of each, and $200 or $300 extra in the bank. He was a moneyed man. I want to clear that up because none of my people ever been millionaires.
No millionaires. Oh yeah. Well, look, I guess that's about everything then. I was thinking here while you were talking. What brought you to Castroville after you retired? Have you been through here, or did you ever live here before?
Oh, let me put it this way. I'm going to use the word conned into it, but I don't exactly mean it that way. But here's what actually happened. We had a bookkeeper by the name of Enderly, Pop Enderly, we called him. His name was Lewis Enderly.
Uh-huh.
And at one time, he had been the chief cashier or treasurer or something like that for the bank in Kerrville. What's the name of that old time bank? Kerrville? Shriner Bank.
That's right.
In Kerrville. And he moved to San Antonio from Kerrville. We advertised in the paper for a bookkeeper, and he answered the ad, and the boss snapped him up right away as a bookkeeper. He was a bookkeeper, I guess, there for about 10 or 12 years up until the time he retired. He bought a place out here in Castroville, down here on the Medina River. It's now owned by Robert, next door to Francis Decker. Robert Cosgrove. He bought the place. That's when Pop Enderly bought that place and moved out here. In the meantime, I would come out of San Antonio on a Saturday afternoon and spend Saturday night and half the day Sunday with Pop Enderly over there remodeling that house and building concrete steps down to the river. And so he got it all fixed up, and he came to me one time and he said, "Russell, you got some money. Why don't you spend some of it?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I know a place out there. It's on the corner, and it's for sale, and you ought to buy it." And I said, "Well, what do you mean? Why should I buy something in Castroville?" "Well, you may want to do what I'm doing someday and move out there and retire, get out of this big old city." I said, "Well, what type of property is it?" He said, "Well, there's Ms. Berry over there. She wants to sell 6 lots I said, oh my God, six lots.
Get rid of some money real quick.
What would I ever do with six lots? Well, I don't care what you do with it, you ought to buy it. It's a good investment. So I said, well, how much does she want for it? And then he told me the details and all of that. So I gave him $1,000 and told him, I said, all right, you give this to whoever's handling the paper and I'll buy them. And then when the papers is all ready, why, she'll get the rest of the money. Well, the deal went through. I paid them all off. 3 or 4 years later, I said, Pop, I think I'll come out to your place today. I want to see my lots.
You haven't even seen him yet.
And he took me over there. You know where Dr. Nixon is living? Down there?
Where do you live? I don't even know.
You know where Charlie Cease lives?
Yeah.
Cat a corner across the street in the little White House.
Oh.
Do you know where Jimmy Havey lives?
Mm-mm.
Dottie Havey?
Mm-mm.
Right.
I don't know
Charlie,
nothing.
Charlie.
I know where Charlie lives.
All right, then you know where I live. So he took me over there and I said, I really got myself a mesquite thicket around this fence, haven't I? I said, is there a fence under there? He said, sure. I'm telling you that the weeds and the brush are as high as that door. They're all the way around that lot up the tree. Then I met Mr. Minsberry. They were still living at the old homestead. They owned the whole block.
Block, uh-huh.
And sold me 3/4 of it, okay. 6 lots in an L shape. 2 2/10 acres in it.
In there.
Yeah. So that locked on, and I got that all cleaned up. I got me some wetbacks to come by there one day. I was out there working. I cleaned off the corners so we
see where you were going,
in.
Yeah.
And I got me some wetbacks out there, and it cost me $4 there, and they cleaned up, chopped out all them things. They just come by. So I said, yeah, I'll give you $4 to clean up all of this. You know?
Yeah.
Just kidding them.
Right.
Right.
They do it.
Yeah. There was 2 of them. But anyhow, I dropped on that away, and I paid taxes on it. I paid my taxes on those lots for about $1.50 a year, county taxes.
Couldn't beat that, could you?
No, I wasn't losing any money on that. So then he came to me, and he said, Russell, I got something else I want you to buy. I said, what's that, Pop? He said, I want you to buy that little house up there on the corner from me. I said, what kind of a deal have you got there? He said, well, that man wants to sell it, and he's got it rented now, and it's bringing in $18 a month rent. And it's rented. They got some good renters in there. But he wants to sell it, and I want you to buy it. I said, look, Pop.
You talked me into one deal.
You talked me into one deal. I'll be careful on this one. He said, you don't have to be careful on this. The renters are going to stay. You won't have anything to do, I'll collect the rent each month and bring it in to you and give it to you. And I said, well, what's it going to cost? Well, he said, then he talks more to the man. Went back and talks more to the man. The man gives him a price. And the Pop said, now, you buy that. You buy it. If you don't buy it, then I'll buy it. But I want you to buy it, Russell. I said, all right. So I bought that. 2 or 3 years later, I come back out and, hey, Pop, where's that house and all that? I don't know what that is. Well, in the meantime, Pop passed away. And when I retired, I told Helen, I said, I want to move out of San Antonio. I can't see anything that's trouble in this town. I want to get out of where it's quiet. And she said, well, I don't think it's so hot. She said, where do you want it to go? To Sabine or Castroville? I own a bunch of property down in Sabine now. And I own 2 lots out at Del Rio. lots in Schulenburg.
Oh, oh, country town.
And so the deal on this here, I just brought her out here. I said, oh, I think that's too late. So we come out there and I said, all right, then. There's six lots there and this place here. I can live anywhere. I have been doing it 39 years. The Southwest photo, one motel to the other, one hotel. I can live anywhere, honey.
Where can you live, huh?
What do you like? He says, I like this spot right over here, the house, on the corner. He says, we got better neighbors. See, at that time, it was just Kemp and Condor on this side. She said, I know those other people are good people there. I said, all right, so I went back home, drew up all the plans myself, built the house myself with my own hands, and my son-in-law.
My God.
I drew up everything to scale. I had that experience before.
Well, you said, you went to Carpenter,
And,
oh, that room, put your own sweat and blood into something just means more to you.
My grandson, he still talks about helping his pawpaw fill that house.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's how I got
That's how you got to Castroville.
Yeah. Well, but it has always been a kind of a warm spot in my heart for Castroville, because I used to pass here so often. I think of my grandfather and Uncle Jack. I lived there. See, he lived here for 2 years. Right on that stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, right there in Castroville. In a tent on the river someplace with some other men. I don't know what he was doing.
Just camped and wrote there. Well, I think we just about got everything, and I think we've made it in time before our tape is going to cut off on us yet. So we're doing real good, I think. I sure appreciate you coming by and doing this.
I'm glad to do it. And
we can probably come up with some more subjects as we go along. Like the train. I didn't mean to get off onto that train, but that was just very interesting.
That's all right.
I know we didn't plan on that one, but as things came up, you might as well, go over them, and that was really...
A lot of kids down there,
they've
never seen a steam engine.
No, when you say fireman and, like living on the train
and
like
you
that.
You seen that old engine sitting in that park there on Broadway in San Antonio, that locomotive?
I've seen it there,
I fired that sucker many a mile.
You're kidding.
That 794, many a mile I've fired that engine.
Well, and you said your dad worked for the railroad also?
My daddy
kind of was in the blood,
conductor. Yeah, but I went against the grain on him when I went to work as a call boy and then a fireman. He wanted me to be a telegraph operator.
Oh.
And as a kid, he set up a station here, a station out in the back in the old barn.
Mm-hmm.
And he would send to me out there and we'd work back and forth.
That's what he wanted you to do.
Yeah, that's what he wanted me to do. And that was one of the first things to do, first things to go.
That was the first thing you eliminated.
That was the first thing to go.
That's right.
You see, when the railroads began to cut back, the telegraph operators.
That's the first thing they cut.
Pick up the phone and talk to the man.
See?
No more of that there.
Kind of stuff.
You see? If you've got a reasonable mind, you can understand that. Now, you take for an instance, an A was a dot dash. Mm-hmm. But you don't try to separate the dot and the dash and put them together.
I see.
It's the sound that you're reading, not the dot dash.
Not dot dash.
You're not reading that. So it takes a keen ear.
With that telegraph. Well, sounds like you know something about that, though.
Well, I do. We would practice the dot dash as an A, you see.
And would they spell out each letter when they were doing something like that?
Oh, sure. You've got to pick up those sounds. This is like playing a piano.
And so you had to have somebody on the other end that knew what the sounds were,
to send them to you.
Otherwise, it's like translating Greek or something.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I guess we'll close and I'll turn this on off here, Mr. Sal.
I thought my...